On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Should we buy or sell the Philadelphia 76ers this upcoming season with Joel Embiid and Paul George question marks? Also, VJ Edgecombe of the Sixers, third number one overall pick. What is his best NBA comp? And lastly, Malik Beasley. The investigation into Malik Beasley takes some windy turns. We're going to go talk about that and the latest reporting on that story. All this coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to The Big Number. I'm Tom Haberstroh, and that's my man, Dan Devine. Dan, what's going on?
Tom, I am back after a refreshing week with my family in and around a beautiful Acadia National Park in Maine, hiking and eating lots of lobster rolls. I think five was my final lobster roll count, but you know, who's over the course of the week.
Is that
week,
the big number today? Is five?
I put up some big numbers lobster roll wise while I was away, but I did not put up any numbers with you. So I'm ready to do that again. Tom Haberstroh, what is our big number on this week? Middle of July edition of The Big Number.
Well, I want to ask, are you a Connecticut lobster roll person with the butter, or are you more of like a mayonnaise lobster roll?
First off, thanks for the question. I appreciate the opportunity to get on the record on this issue. I did explore both sides of this discussion while I was on the trip, and I needed to like confirm my feelings. I went in as a mayo guy. I came out as a mayo guy. Let's be honest here. The drawn butter's good. It's just not getting me to that mayo place, which is a sentence. Yeah. I feel like if I had a nickel for every time I said it's not getting me to that mayo place, I'd have five nickels. Tom, what is our big number?
This week's big number is three nickels, as in 15. This week's big number is 15. That's right. That is the number of games that Paul George, Joel Embiid, and Tyrese Maxey played last season together. 15. That's it.
That's not very
many. So there's an 82-game season,
yeah,
and they only played for 15 of them. In those games, they went 7-8. They weren't even a 500 team with their big three. And that's relevant because a lot of stuff happening this week, Dan, with the Philadelphia 76ers. I know there's this whole LeBron James saga that's happening over there in LA. never quiet on that Western front. But here on the East, we have this Philadelphia 76ers team that if those guys are healthy, if Jared McCain and VJ Edgecombe come through and Quentin Grimes come through, they could win the East this year. But there's this other thing that's happening, which is this like sense of dread around the 76ers that every time you get really buying into the 76ers as an idea, as a concept, a team that a year ago was the second most likely team to win the East and take down the Boston Celtics.
Oh, wow.
Now they seem to continue to slide. And we only have 15 games with this big three between Paul George and Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey to go on. And now we get a report from Shams Charania over at ESPN, reported on Monday this week, Dan, that Paul George hurt his knee at a recent workout and needed to go on arthroscopic left knee surgery that will knock him out for the next approximately 6 weeks. Apparently, they're going to reevaluate things in the interim. Once training camp arrives, they're going to take a look at things with his left knee, and also battling injuries last season, and Joel Embiid battling injuries last season. Dan, I want to ask you, did you jinx the 76ers? Because I kind of feel this is all your fault.
All right. So first off, I love the idea that I jinxed it. Not like the 76ers have been operating under like a phalanx and hail of jinxes for, you know, the last decade and a half or whatever, since Andrew Bynum went cosmic bowling, I guess. I don't know. But so our friends at the Rights Turkey Sanchez podcast, the only 76ers podcast, Spike Eskin and Michael Levin, were talking about how no one in the national media wants to talk about the Sixers. Probably because of this overarching storm of dread and the idea that like you don't know what you don't know about the Sixers. You can't bank exactly on who's going to play and when and in what formation and all that sort of stuff. There's just so many uncertainties surrounding them. And I noted on social media that I had pitched a little number on the Sixers when we were doing our last show about like which teams could theoretically, which sort of longer shot teams might be able to pose a threat to the Oklahoma City Thunder's, you know, burgeoning dynasty. Like, who's a long shot team worth kind of keeping an eye on? And one of my numbers was, it was this kind of idea. They only had but so many games together with their main guys. And I think my version of it was three, because if you factor in Jared McCain, their rookie from last year, only three games did all four of those guys play together. So like, they really didn't have any of their main dudes for most of last season. And so the idea was like, you have to be, I mean, because of the chaos all over the Eastern Conference, Jason Tatum going down, Tyrese Halliburton going down, Damian Lillard going down and then being waived and stretched, and the Bucks looking completely different now than they did, you know, just a couple months ago. There was at least like there's an opportunity here. There's a pathway for what if it goes right and like the Sixers get even like moderate health bounce back. Is there an opportunity for them to look something more like the team that we had seen? And then, so I note on social media that I'd pitched this. It got nixed because we had four other good little numbers. I try to make sure that I present options for our team here. I did suggest that maybe you should be banned from the Right Sirky Sanchez podcast, which is not, it's a decision it's a decision above my pay grade. I'm a traitor. I think we can all fairly say that. So Spike and Michael have to decide if you're banned theoretically or in practice. And what happens after that is when the national media starts to talk about the 76ers again, Paul George has to go get arthroscopic knee surgery after missing a ton of time last season with groin and ankle.
That's what you get. Karma, you know, not just a song by Taylor Swift, but also
that is
what you get for saying that I should be banned from the rights to Ricky. How dare you?
What I love too is just going back through the injury tracker for Paul George for last season, because there's a bunch of entries. I got Fox Sports keeps like the injury log, and then just December 4th, undisclosed. Like, you know what? We're not sure what's. Yeah, there's like knee, groin. Who knows? Maybe he's sick. Who knows? He's not going to be here anymore. And so now we are heading into the, you know, big heavy part of the summer before training camp in a couple of months, where Paul George is returning from injury. Joel Embiid is returning from injury. Jared McCain is returning from injury. There is like undetermined timelines on all of them. And it does make it harder to talk about the 76ers, doesn't it, Tom? The national media is going to have a hard time talking about the 76ers right now.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just go ahead and say it. I think they need to move on from the Embiid, Paul George timeline and just go with the kids. I think it has come to that point, but the problem is, no matter how much they would like to move on from this and say we need to go full youth movement and hand the ball to the kids and let them drive this thing with Tyrese Maxey, Jared McCain, VJ Edgecombe, and what looks like to be Quentin Grimes, it isn't really up to them. It's up to other teams who are really like looking at these contracts with Paul George and Joel Embiid and determining whether those are plus value assets and what it would take for them to take on Joel Embiid's contract, which will pay him a ton of money going forward. And we get this story, this ESPN feature from Datun Akintoye, which is like a book that very rarely do we get these magazine features anymore. It's profile pieces where you sit with an athlete and you report their lives and get inside their thinking and all this stuff. And what a report from ESPN on this one, that Joel Embiid going through the history of his injuries and like losing faith in, you know, people around him and the cone of silence that he operates in. There is one excerpt from this, Dan, this story. He has 9,500 unread texts, Joel Embiid, and 875 missed calls. Okay.
That I feel stressed out. Do you feel stressed out just saying those numbers out loud? Those are big numbers.
Those are big numbers. Almost 10,000 unread texts and almost 1,000 missed calls. I get like anxious when there's like 10 missed calls or voicemails on my thing. And so it's been hard to penetrate, get into his inner circle. Injuries are very sensitive for anybody, but especially when you're an MVP dealing with all of this pressure to deliver. And the fact that the 76ers haven't gotten to the conference finals under Joel Embiid and in this era. I can understand why he feels like everyone's, what's that that Rapunzel meme that Kevin Durant has as his profile picture where everyone's got a sword and they're just like coming after him.
Yeah.
I can understand why it feels like that being Joel Embiid. I also understand from the 76ers standpoint, which is like, we've got these amazing, young, talented players. And as long as Joel Embiid and Paul George are on this team, and with all those question marks around their knees and their health questions and their ability to gel together, we don't even know if they can play well together in that chemistry. I think the Luka Doncic Dallas Mavericks trade kind of, I think, ripped the Band-Aid off for a lot of these executives. I'm not saying Daryl Morey is going to trade Joel Embiid and Paul George, but I think we can expect the unexpected. Like, that is where we are in the NBA. And given the fact that the Sixers are paying, they paid that big three, $136 million last season. They played 15 games together, which if you do the math, carry the two, that's $9 million per game that those big three played together. 136 divided by 15. And next year, that salary is going to increase, and it's going to increase again the following season. So over the next three seasons, we're looking at a situation in which this coming year, they got $145 million on the books dedicated to those three, $153 in 2026, 2027. And if Paul George picks up that player option, that fourth year of his player option, that will be $163 million that are allocated to those three players.
Oof, yeah, like well over 90% of the salary cap for each of the next 3 years. I mean, this was the bet they made, right? Like the cap space plan of where not going to turn the, you know, benefits of the James Harden trade and those extra assets we've got. We're not going to turn those into longer term deals because we want to make sure we carve out enough salary cap space to where if we keep Tyrese Maxey on his rookie scale cap hold before we extend him, we can have enough space to sign one max free agent. Paul George is the perfect fit, theoretical max free agent between a dominant center and an ascendant point guard. And then the thing I keep thinking of is during the finals, Thunder head coach Mark Daigneault kept talking about how the Pacers were like a conceptual team that you had to defend conceptually. And like, is there a more conceptual team than the Philadelphia 76ers? Because we don't practically actually see what it looks like in you know, the lived experience of that team being on the floor. But so they are stuck. They are stuck in this in-between of we've made our pot commitment to this build. Mm-hmm. And also we are like backfilling because again, if you're paying more than 90% of your cap to three guys, you've got to find the other talent somewhere else. And you've got like the kids have to be all right. You've got to have, you got to nail the McCain pick. You've got to nail the Edgecombe pick. You've got to, you know, on your around the margins things, it's like, is, you know, Quentin Grimes kind of comes in like almost by accident in that deal. And then like, yeah, you know, we'll talk about him again in a minute, but you know, Trendon Watford for 2 years on like a short money. Hopefully we see like all of these, you got to nail everything else, which also then makes the part where you're bringing and keeping around Kyle Lowry and Eric Gordon and Andre Drummond on where like you don't really expect them to play major minutes, but they're like taking up three rosters. But it's, they're in this in between. And I think the thing about me that about them that fascinates me is, what if that's okay? Like, what if it's good? Tom, hear me out. What if it's good though? Like, what if the Sixers are good? That's the thing. I keep looking at this and going like, we can take it as read that the East kind of sucks. It sucked before everybody was hurt, and now everybody's hurt. So like, there's like four teams maybe you feel pretty strongly about in the Eastern Conference relative to everybody else, and even those teams like the Cavaliers keep getting, you know, wedgied in the second round of the playoffs, and the Knicks just fired their head coach, and we have no idea what the like new reiterated versions of the Magic and who, like, there's stuff to figure out. In theory, Joel Embiid and Paul George and Tyrese Maxey, and you get like more than 20 something games of Jared McCain, and you have like this new injection of athleticism and excitement and Vijay Edgecombe, like, What if it's good though, Tom? What if it's good?
Yeah, what if it's good? What if
it's good though?
But this team Do you know how many wins they had last year when they were like the second best team in the East or projected to be? They won 24 games. Okay. They went 4-24 after the All-Star break.
Tom, it's more than the big number of 15. You got to give them that. 24 is more than 15. You got to give them that.
So we're looking at the odds right now. Looking forward, they're fifth in the East. They're sitting at plus 3,500 to win the NBA Finals next year. This time last year, when they got Paul George, they were plus 800. So the odds have lengthened about four times as much.
Yeah.
It's not great. And then if you look at the fact that, like, I feel like there's only like two outcomes. It's either they make the conference finals and they make the NBA finals and everyone is playing and happy and Jared McCain continues this ascension and VJ Edgeko, oh my God, this guy is so good. Or it's the same thing as we saw last year where just nobody can stay healthy and it's a total disaster. So that's the pessimistic view. I'm taking the under. I'm taking the under on this group. The biggest predictor of future injury is past injury. And when you're dealing with a 35-year-old Paul George who has another knee injury that they're not even going to reevaluate until September, it's until training camp. I'm just sitting here like, that's like six, eight weeks away. This isn't just like a little quick scope and then he's going to be ready to be on the floor in 3 weeks. This is a significant injury. And then Embiid, I really highly recommend reading that profile over at ESPN because it is a window into what motivates and drives Joel Embiid. And a lot of it is just secrecy. It's like he does not appear to trust a lot of people in his life. And that includes his employers where there's a lot of trying to figure out how to get my knee right, how to get my body right. Why is my eye hurt? I broke my face on this incredibly unlucky thing. And it's hard to imagine everything coming together and threading that needle and Embiid becomes that MVP, not just for the regular season, but for the postseason run. So I think I've seen enough. And when you got a 35-year-old Paul George and a 31-year-old who seems to be kind of like holding on by a thread here physically, I just feel like it's if you can find a taker for Embiid's contract, another team that is desperate for an MVP caliber talent, I think you have to really consider that if you're the 76ers. And there's a lot of Sixers fans and Rights to Ricky fans that I've talked to that will unban me if I say you go down with Embiid, but there's some people who, I mean, I'm guessing most people are like, whatever happens to Embiid, we're not trading that guy. The fan base is we're just gonna go and ride it the whole way through, and we don't want to see that guy wear another jersey. But I can understand why Daryl Morey, who was not here for the trust the process, Sam Hinkie was, and Brian Colangelo was. I can understand if he just makes a cold, calculated decision on what is the risk, what is the benefit, and we got to make a move that's best for the franchise. So on that note, we're going to get into four little numbers. Dan Devine expressing some optimism about this group. You kind of teased it a little bit, but let's get into it. The things that make you excited about the future for the Philadelphia 76ers and buying that stock of this Sixers team that seems to be kind of floating in this fog. Dan, you feel good about this?
Instantly feel bad about what's about to happen, but I love it. You have the glass half empty. Let's fill up that glass, Tom.
All right. Big number, 15. Number of games that Paul George, Joel Embiid, and Tyrese Maxey played together 1 year into this whole project. I kind of feel like they're the Brooklyn Nets with KD and James Harden and Kyrie. That's the vibes I'm getting here, Dan. But please tell me I'm wrong. Give me some faith. Give me some reason to believe in the 76ers.
All right. So our first little number this week is 589.589. That was Jared McCain's true shooting percentage last season. And, you know, for those just catching up to the numbers on the program, true shooting percentage factors in a player's accuracy on 2-point shots, 3-point shots, and free throws. So just generally giving you a sense of how good a shooter that person is all around. League average last year, 576. So McCain comfortably above that as a 19-year-old one and done. So pretty impressive, right? He did that on a usage rate just south of 25%. So that means that about a quarter of Philly's offensive possessions, he finished with either a shot attempt, a free throw, a foul drawn, or a turnover. So high above league average true shooting on that kind of high usage. The only other guys who done that as rookies, minimum 500 minutes played, so this high a true shooting percentage, this high a usage rate, it's David Robinson, Michael Jordan, Arvydas Sabonis, Karl-Anthony Towns, Alonzo Mourning, Drazen Petrovic, Zion Williamson, and most important of all, Rodrigue Bobois, the god Roddy Buckets.
Roddy B! Yes, Roddy Buckets. Yes.
So you'll note a lot of really good players on that list, including Rodrigue Bobois. We'll crank that down a little bit. We'll mess with the sliders because I was a week away. I haven't gotten to play with Stathead in a little bit. So I'm going screwing around. If you move that not just for not for rookies, but guys this young, before their age 20 season, that kind of true shooting, that kind of usage. It's Luka, Zion, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Kat. That's it. All of which is to say, as a 6'2", one-and-done 19-year-old, Jared McCain showed the possibility of being like a super efficient, high-usage shot creator, movement shooter, on-ball creator, off-ball mover, all these sorts of things, on a level commensurate with some of the better offensive players we've seen in the last several decades. Giant caveats in this, okay? Only played 23 games before tearing his meniscus, so who knows if this would have held up over a larger sample size. He is returning from season-ending surgery. When he returns, all accounts are good to go. He's been working out with the Summer Sixers, although he's not playing in Summer League, so TBD on that. He barely played with the other Sixer stars, as we mentioned. The big three barely played together. McCain barely played with them. Not more than 250 minutes with any of the other guys. That said, their offense was bad last year. Adding in a high usage, high efficiency, often, you know, off-ball shooter, on-ball creator, maybe this could be helpful?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, the guy who started 8 games and averaged 23.8 points per game could be helpful as a 19-year-old putting up these kind of numbers. For sure. He was awesome. I loved watching Jared McCain. The ball handling, the off-the-ball stuff, like you could look squint a little bit and see Steph Curry, young Steph Curry out there. Just the way that he was on ball, off ball, the balance, the self-awareness out there. Just, it was incredible. It's not something that I saw a lot at Duke when he played at Duke in his one and done year. And he kind of blossomed in this environment that we typically don't see Jared McCain, who is not a lottery pick. He was not a top 5 pick and he came in right away and was getting buckets. And then he gets hurt. It's another thing here that I'm just like, yeah, best case scenario, he's going to be a 15, 16, 17 point scorer next to these guys. But the more likely scenario is it's going to take him a while, right? To get back to where he was after this injury, did not participate in Summer League, although he was there at Summer League in Vegas and just kind of being Jared McCain-like, but not able to play and not able to do the things that I think Sixers fans would like to see if he can suit up and play at this point. But again, like with Embiid and with Paul George, we kind of have to wait and see about what kind of health he's in. But as far as prospects go, I mean, he was going to be rookie of the year.
Yeah, he was on his way.
He was going to be rookie of the year. So like the Sixers kind of have this found money. They picked up a $100 bill off the street and being like, wait a minute. Like, we have something here where he's not just a good young player. He's maybe the best young player in that class last year. So I'm again, same place that I'm at with Paul George and Embiid is I know the talent. I'll believe it when I see it this upcoming year. McCain, I think, is going to have a great career. But coming back from this injury, I'll wait and see.
I think that's completely reasonable. I'm just allowing in the flower of summer here myself to imagine like him developing dribble handoff chemistry, coming off curls, you know, some of the two-man game kind of JJ Redick old, so you know, the Marco Bellinelli kind of plays that would open things up on the offensive end. Someone who can play in smaller backcourts, can play off of the other stars. There's a lot of optionality there. And also just good vibes. I feel like you need a vibe shift. And this is the kind of young man that can provide some of that energy.
You read that Embiid piece and you think to yourself, man, you need some good vibes around that guy. Like, you need a Jared McCain around Joel Embiid. And I do feel like that injection of energy and that just positivity and optimism that he just breathes, you can feel it coming out of his pores in Jared McCain. I feel like, man, that would be great to have all around this group, but it has to be healthy. And that's the injury health, player health variable that drives this entire thing.
Absolutely. We'll go to another kind of variable. You talked about McCain blossoming in his early season run. Our second little number is 5. This one focuses on late season. 5 is how many players after the trade deadline last season made at least 75 threes, dished 100 assists, and snagged 35 steals. So all of those things, threes, assists, and steals. Those 5 players, James Harden, Stephen Curry, Luka Doncic, Tyrese Halliburton, and Quentin Grimes, number 5 there, Quentin Grimes, who landed in Philly as kind of like an aftershock from the Luka deal, yeah. Because you had like the Luka deal brought AD, but it also brought Max Christie. And then you're just like, now we've got 2 3-and-D kind of two guards here, and Max Christie is signed for longer, and Quentin Grimes is about to be a restricted free agent. So like, all right, we'll rebalance the roster, flip him for Caleb Martin, and, you know, we'll figure it out. And like, in theory, that made sense. And then in practice, because Caleb Martin had been in Philadelphia, he was, you know, cursed to have had a horrifying injury that, you know, he barely was able to play. And then as soon as Quentin Grimes went to Philadelphia, he just like kaboomed. He went absolutely bonkers. Over 21 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists per game, 37% from 3. Like, he's on the ball more. And again, it's sort of similar to what we talked about with McCain in the early part of the season. When everybody's injured, somebody's got to get the reps. But he got those reps and did a ton with them as like pick and roll creator and somebody pulling up as opposed to just having catch and shoots created for him, getting downhill, going to the rim, driving to the basket. Again, all the caveats of like, does this scale back when you have more talent around you? And oh, by the way, he's a restricted free agent and still unsigned. So it remains to be seen what the deal looks like and how happy everybody is and yada, yada, yada. But in theory, again, we're the theoretical application here. 6'5" two guard who can shoot, who can handle, who can run a second side action, who can defend well enough at the guard spots that Tom Thibodeau started him in a playoff series. And he played like all 48 minutes against the Heat and was guarding Jimmy Butler straight up. Like, that feels like a pretty good guy to put between Embiid and Maxey and George, no?
Yes, yes. Like, you can talk yourself into like that starting 5 of McCain, Maxey, Grimes, Paul George, and Embiid. Like, that's a really good, talented group. Little undersized. I'm a little worried about Paul George's ability to guard at the 4 position, but he might have that as his future position because of the lack of mobility and just not able to get his body right to be defending point of attack and kind of this switchable guy that can guard 1 through 4. I don't know if he's still at that point of his career where he could be that defensive player of the year caliber, all defense caliber player. But putting that aside, like, that team is going to lead the league in scoring. Like, these are all bucket getters.
Super talented.
You know? Super talented on the offensive end of the ball. And if Embiid's healthy and defending the rim like he can, you can see how that can be a two-way team. But Quentin Grimes, I'll just give you this stat here. From March 19th to April 7th, he averaged 25 points per game, 24.8, 5.7 assists, 1.6 steals, and 3.8 rebounds. His effective field goal percentage was 55%. He shot 79% from the free throw line. And they lost every single one of those games.
Well, he was doing his job.
0-9. 0-9. Yeah. They were a 9-game losing streak when he was getting those buckets. So it's like, as much, this really is just kind of like, what is it? The Rorschach test, where it's just like, you see Quentin Grimes and you're like, awesome player. Look at those numbers. And then the biggest number there is 9, as in they didn't win a single game. They lost 9 straight during that stretch. And yes, if they have Embiid and they have Paul George, but this is the problem. This is the thing that I keep coming back to, is we can point to all these amazing individual statistics. And then it's just like, oh yeah, they didn't win any of those games. And even when they were healthy and they were playing together, they were 7-8. Like, they weren't even gangbusters, you know?
True. That said, and yeah, you're right. He played Grimes played 28 games in Philly, and they went 4-24 in them. So not like his winning percentage, not ideal in that set of circumstances.
Fault. It's not his fault. Yes, you know, but
in the spirit of trying to fill up that glass, Tom, I'm going to say like you just we're cutting and pasting, we're editing together the team here, and we're saying we're going to take the beginning of McCain's season, we're going to take the end of Grimes' season, we're going to take the last healthy times we saw these other guys, and we're going to sort of pastiche it all together into a mix. Also, Quentin Grimes and the gang did their job because being that bad down the stretch of last season allowed the 76ers to keep their first-round draft pick, which landed in the top five, which allowed them to get the guy who is the subject of our third little number this week.
That is a professional segue right there.
It was labored, my man. I was in deep waters. our third little number this week is 3.8. Getting into my stat head bag again. That is how many offensive rebounds per 100 possessions and how many steals per 100 possessions VJ Edgecombe averaged during his lone season at Baylor. 3.8 offensive rebounds per 100, 3.8 steals per 100, which to me, and you could tell me if you think otherwise here, feels like a pretty fun proxy for like athleticism meeting feel, where you're I can like get a sense of when there's an opportunity to go get the ball and then I can actually go get it. Offensive glass and then, you know, creating a possession on the steals. There's not a lot of guys who generate extra possessions on both ends, who have generated extra possessions on both ends at that level in a college season. Running through the sports reference database, only 19 players have put up a season with that frequency of offensive rebounds and steals. And a lot of them are, you know, kind of college wonders that we don't know intimately here, but a couple of fun ones for us NBA heads. Andre Robertson, who wound up being like a really important point of attack defender in Oklahoma City on playoff teams. Gary Payton II, who, again, a curious fit kind of, but like wound up being a really important part of a title winner in Golden State. And maybe most fun from a VJ Edgecombe projection standpoint is Victor Oladipo when he was at Indiana. And he winds up after a couple of teams, goes to Orlando, goes to Oklahoma City, winds up back in Indiana with the Pacers and blossoms into like all-star, all-NBA, all-defensive teamer where the athleticism plays on both ends before the injuries that were injuries are just hovering over everything we're talking about today. But before injuries hit it, like the projection of the upside of what if you are that kind of athlete on both ends, how can you be an impact player? So you land the number three pick in the draft. Edgecombe is the fruit of that process. So like, what does that kind of athlete add for this version of the Philly rotation? You've got a lot of older guys, as you mentioned. You've got a lot of guys who might sort of be more station to station. What does Edgecombe provide in that mix?
Future Jimmy Butler.
Ooh.
That's what I'm going with here. I see so much Jimmy Butler in this kid's game. He's 19 years old, but he is a gym rat. He plays both ends of the floor, really cares about defense. And his offense has this like mid-range game, this kind of like athleticism, but has this kind of this little peak, this little tease of like a 20-point scorer in him. If he can just kind of add these more rounded out edges of his game, plays a lot bigger. Just has this kind of motor and drive that reminds me a lot of the guy from Marquette that ended up, you know, blowing up that Minnesota Timberwolves locker room, forcing his way out and then going to the Philadelphia 76ers and coming inches away from the Eastern Conference Finals and making a run with Joel Embiid and this team. And I do think that if we can just keep Embiid healthy for the next 2-3 years, maybe we can see if Jimmy Butler 2.0, what he does next to a healthy Embiid. But ultimately, man, again, the timetables don't line up here is that he's 19 years old. And of course, you've got Jared McCain. He's going to be 21. It's like, how can we accelerate these timetables, Dan, so that Embiid and Paul George can still be as talented as they are and able to play to really maximize this VJ Edgecombe, which brings me to think that maybe it's unreasonable and we need to be realistic and say that, like, build around the kids.
I hear what you're saying, and I don't like it because July is a time for a lack of reason. July is a time to be dreaming of bigger and better and greater things than this. And so what I'm going to say is exactly Jimmy Butler 2.0, perfectly fine, and plug and play immediately, superstardom. I love that. We're going to move right past that. The component part of that, I think it's going to be very interesting to watch how, because if you're talking, we just named three guards, right? And we haven't talked that much about Tyrese Maxey, who was like an all-NBA caliber guard the last time they had a full team. So it's a smaller construction. It's, you know, the young guards are going to be kind of the four of the six or seven best players in the team, in all likelihood, or most important players of the team. Nick Nurse is going to have to figure out how to mix and match the lineups. There's also the component of, in order to keep the your powder dry to re-sign Quentin Grimes in restricted free agency, Gershon Yabusele, who was great for them last year, he goes, which removes like your maybe your most natural starting four. So yeah, there's going to be some mixing and matching and challenging to figure out. Which brings us to the most challenging part of all, Joel Hans Embiid. Our fourth and final little number is not a very little number at all, Tom. It's plus 2,815. Plus 2815. That is Joel Embiid's career plus minus across 16,531 career minutes, regular season, postseason, play-in, in-season tournament, whatever. 16,500 minutes, 2,000 plus 2815, according to our friends at PBP Stats. Since he made his debut in 2016-17, that is the 11th highest plus minus of all NBA players. Only 10 higher.
And to get plus minus, you have to play to get to that number.
That's right.
And so even with his injuries, he's at plus 2815. That's insane.
Yeah. The 10 ahead of him, Steph, Tatum, Jokic, Giannis, Rudy Gobert, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, Drew Holiday, Kawhi Leonard, and James Harden. That's it. The last two times we saw Embiid even kind of healthy, it was averaging 33-11-6 against the Knicks in the first round of that series, first round of that playoffs, on a bum knee with Bell's palsy, and we put up a 50-point game.
It was insane. It was insane. Yeah.
And then it's him going toe-to-toe with Jokic in the knockout round of the Olympics, and they wind up, you know, Team USA winds up pulling out that game. Like, the job he was there for, he did. The last three times Joel Embiid even played 40 games in a season, he either finished second in MVP voting or won it. And this, Tom, is why it is ultimately impossible to completely give up on the Philadelphia 76ers. Because while it's never Joel Embiid's year, what if it is, though?
Yeah. You sound like Tobias Fünke right now.
Yes, that's how I feel. I'm like, it never works. But what if it works for us? Yes, that's exactly how I feel about Joel Embiid and the Sixers. I'm like, it's never the year. But what if it's the year, though?
What if it's the year? Like, what if Embiid plays 82 games and plays 20 games?
Hang on. You're misrepresenting me. This is the lamestream media all over again. Yeah. No, yeah. I'm not saying what if he plays 82. I'm saying what if he plays 50-something. If you can get even just to past half the season, and I think that's something that Embiid sort of referenced in the big feature that we were talking about earlier, is like, if you inverted some of the production, right? And it's like, yeah, he takes his foot off the gas a little bit in the regular season, but then winds up having the playoff series, the playoff run that I think all of us expect he's capable of. Does our perception of him as a player completely invert, right? If it's like 23-8 in 30-something minutes a game during the regular season and he plays 50 games and doesn't qualify for all NBA or MVP or all defensive or whatever, but he's able to stay on the court and has one of those like Dirk 2011 playoff runs, does everything we think about him change? I think it does. And I think it's possible. And I think if all these things stack up, he's got a better supporting cast than he's had in a long time to be able to make that happen.
Yeah. I'm going to give you an excerpt here from this story.
Okay.
Okay. The author, Dotun Akintoye, kind of sits down with Daryl Morey, the president of basketball operations for the 76ers. Nick Nurse left the room, and the writer's just like, hey man, do you have like all these kind of like trajectories and scenarios in your head of like how this will play out with Embiid? Right. And he's like, yeah, that's exactly how I think about it. It's crazy that you said that. And he goes, I asked Morey about a possible future where Embiid's knee doesn't heal, a future where he's never an MVP level player again. And Morey paused. And then we find out, like, kind of just the rehashing of all the contracts that are either doubling down. Embiid is the kind of player you double down on, triple down on. You lose your job over him, disappear. Sam Hinkie did. Hinkie's mentor, Daryl Morey, might just yet. And then Daryl says, I take it back. I don't think. And then it trails off. Morey never finished the sentence. Mulling that future sent a current through his body and through the entire room. His words came apart in a laughing fit. He laughed. And the 76ers head of communications, who had been sitting in the room, laughed. And I laughed. And I don't even know why. Morey stood out of his chair, walked out the door, and said, quote, I'm going to choose to think of the positive today, he said, and walked out. So well, that's you Darryl. Right there.
Yeah,
you
know exactly. What? It's me and Darryl.
we're just laughing. We're giggling. We don't know why. And yeah, here we are. So I think Embiid, we've already talked about it a whole bunch. If he's healthy and if he's right, they have a chance to make me look stupid by saying they should just bail and go with the kids. But you know what? That's why the glass is half full, Dan. That's why we make a good team here.
That's so. Right. Our best case scenario is he's like at worst the second best player in the conference and they got a shot. So let's.
That's right.
As we move out of our reasons for pessimism and our reasons for optimism, let's be Daryl Morey and let's think of the positive today and walk out the door to the break.
So, Dan, as we're kind of prepping for free agency, this news drops on ESPN on the eve of free agency on June 29th. Malik Beasley, impending free agent with the Detroit Pistons, was announced by Shams Charani of ESPN that he was the subject of a federal probe into allegations related to gambling on, you know, NBA games and prop bets. And what terrible timing that is for Malik Beasley. Malik Beasley was set, according to my sources and people around the league, according to multiple reports, that he was about to get like a $40 million contract over 3 years. So I wanted to figure out, like, what's this all about? ESPN had this this little note from David Purdom that there was a gambling source that said there was a game back in January 31st, 2023 that was flagged due to unusual betting activity. And on the unders for his rebounds.
And that was when he was with the Milwaukee Bucks, right? That was before
correct.
He got to Detroit.
And the allegations are apparently about his Bucks season. So he comes off of the Lakers season, gets traded to the Lakers from Utah. The Lakers decline his roughly $16 million team option, and he's forced to sign a vet minimum deal with the Milwaukee Bucks, and they go to the playoffs. Things don't work out for Malik, but he signs a $6 million deal with the Detroit Pistons and has a season for the ages. He broke the franchise record, the Pistons franchise record for most three-pointers made in a season, and he did so by the All-Star break, which is just crazy. He's one of five players in NBA history who have made 300 three-pointers in a single season. He held the Minnesota Timberwolves three-point shooting record. And so I wanted to figure out, like, what is going on here? And I watched the film on that January 31st game from 2023 with the Bucks, and he had not zero rebounds or one rebound or two rebounds, because all that unusual betting activity allegedly was coming in on the under, meaning he would not hit that 2.5 number. But Malik was getting like every rebound in sight. He had 6 rebounds in his short minutes. And I watched that film, like, that is not looking like a guy who's trying to get the unders. He's like flying across the floor. And so I started digging into the story and trying to figure out, like, what is this investigation about? And I came across this tweet from an account. A Knicks superfan had tweeted out in January 30th, the day that the Terry Rozier news came out, January 30th of this year, when Terry Rozier was part of this federal investigation, when he was announced, this account, freemoose_NBA, Dan, tweeted out that Malik Beasley was next. How? How did this person know? 3 months ago, before the Malik Beasley news came to light in June, right before free agency, this account had predicted that Malik Beasley was going to be, he did this cryptic thing. It was M star, 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 B, star, 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 and then followed up with a tweet saying, yeah, the player, there's going to be another player named in a federal investigation. I'm paraphrasing here. And he plays for the Detroit Pistons. So Dan, I don't know if you saw that tweet and was like, wait, but there's Miles Bridges. There's Mikal Bridges. And the one that I thought of too, that was kind of like in the little like game of like what could, what NBA player fits the M star, B star with that many letters? Matis Buzelis.
Ooh, that would be, that would be tough. But then of course, helpfully noting what team the guy plays for. So that, I mean, that, that kind of eliminated all question marks here. So right. Tom, you've introduced a mystery. Did you then proceed to try to solve this mystery with any friends of yours on any platform that you want to highlight?
Yeah, Pablo Torre finds out. I called up Pablo and Amin, and I was like, listen, man, we got to get to the bottom of this. And I had done some of the research over at tomthefinder.com and was like really trying to figure out like what is going on here with this story. And we come across this Moose thing and we go down this rabbit hole and discover that he is actually cousins to the, one of the alleged co-conspirators in the Jontay Porter case. And he had this tweet had kind of connected Jontay Porter, Terry Rozier, and Malik Beasley. And the reason why he was in the know on that or called his shot is because he's relatives with one of the people that the federal authorities arrested and is as charged and is in the middle of kind of figuring out the plea agreement. This guy also was sitting courtside at a Knicks game, the Knicks game, the Dante DiVincenzo shot of last year's postseason. We figured out that all these connections, crazy connections. And it leaves us wondering, like, how involved, if at all, is Malik Beasley in the Jontay Porter scandal or the investigation and all of the things that he has already been he's set to figure out his sentencing on that deal. He pled guilty to multiple counts. This is a very crazy story. I can't even begin to tell you how crazy it was working on it, but it is kind of indicative of this NBA right now where we have the legalized gambling in America, and we're trying to navigate through these very rocky waters and figuring out, you know, what happens from here. And I don't know what happens from here, Dan. Like, do you remember this guy, Free Moose, as a Knicks in the Knicks? Like, he apparently had like 10,000 followers in Knicks Twitter. He was like a little celebrity in Knicks Twitter. Sure. And he had this information months before everybody else.
Yeah. So I don't personally, I mean, it's possible you run across people. I don't remember this person, but also like I'm in that weird spot where, as like a person who writes about the stuff nationally, but is a Knicks fan and hasn't made like a secret of that, I think a lot of Knicks fans think that I hate the Knicks. And so like Knicks Twitter, I think, is often more virulent when I talk about the Knicks than I would expect. So I'm not like dug into the community like that. Like they had a Knicks Twitter day and I was not part of that day. I haven't run across him that I can recall. I was grateful though that, you know, somebody was having a good time that night because I was on deadline and I was not having a good time at the night of the, you know, the Dante DiVincenzo double bang, triple bang, whatever that
bang!
Was. Yeah.
Bang!
Like, when I was like,
oh, Madison Square Garden is shaking right now.
It was my breen. That's a phenomenal breen. And, but it was, I definitely remember being on like the sky bridge and it's like, oh yeah, no, this is rattling and I feel unsafe. And then I had to write on deadline and I filed from an ATM vestibule that night, I think. Cool times professionally for me. Yeah, the Garden kicks you out after like 2 hours after the final press conference. So had to find some place to sit down and file. ATM vestibule, good stuff. Knicks Twitter, of course it's Knicks Twitter. It blew my mind finding out in the, I think your Tom the Finder, like deleted scenes a little bit. This is a guy from Staten Island. I grew up on Staten Island around a lot of people who really wanted to make sure that you knew how plugged in they were and how much of a big shot they were. So finding out that this was one of those guys really made me laugh. I enjoyed that very much. Most criminal operations, alleged criminal operations, most conspiracies, alleged conspiracies will often wind up falling apart around a guy who wants to make sure that everybody knows how plugged in he is. So
that was a crazy thing, man. Like reporting this out was how many times this Moose account, this Moose character kept trying to remind people.
Yes.
That he had the Malik Beasley stuff. And you have to sit there and be like, why is he... The Big Short, the movie, yes, with Steve Carell,
exactly.
Where it's like, why are they confessing? Why are they confessing? And
they're
it's like,
bragging.
No, they're bragging.
Yes.
And it's like, oh man. So I talked to Moose. I got him on the phone. He agreed to do an interview. I couldn't believe
that. That blew my mind that he would get on the phone to talk about this. And not like in a I'm hiding my voice kind of way, but like I'm just chatting.
This is the same guy that was like telling people repeatedly since the Malik Beasley news came out from his burner account that we've discovered. His third account, the first one got suspended by Twitter, X. He says he didn't know why it got suspended. I have my suspicions. He deleted his next one, the Free Moose account, which Free Moose, because his original Moose and underscore NBA account was suspended. Right. So he had this profile picture of him holding a moose, cartoon moose, holding onto a jail bars. I'm telling you, man, this story is insane. Then he started this other one. And then when the Malik Beasley news came out, he was like, hey, don't forget who had it. So where it goes from here, I don't know. Staten Island, Knicks fans, all of it. Carmelo Anthony pops up in this story. Not that we know him to like be part of this investigation, but he appeared to high-five and dap up one of the alleged co-conspirators in the Jontay Porter case 5 days after Jontay Porter was announced to be banned for life.
Jesus. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like many aspects of this are absurd to the point of being funny. And then there's the parts of it that are not. And so I think that was the more serious takeaway that I had after listening to it was just like, and this is maybe my naivety showing when it comes to the world of gambling and other things associated with it. I had believed that the Jontay Porter story was one thing and the Terry Rozier story was one thing and the Malik Beasley story was a different thing. And hearing at least two of those dots, if not directly connected, then like put together, made me think like, oh, this is maybe all one thing. And if it's all one thing, then maybe it's a bigger thing. And if it's a bigger thing, how many more people might be involved in it? And how many more, is there the possibility for more players to be involved in it, more team personnel to be involved in it, more, you know, the people that are involved in the world of basketball and the myriad ways that they can come into contact with sensitive information or, you know, a problem financially or whatever, like the many entry points to this being bigger and worse. I walked away from the story being like, that's insane. And also like a creeping dread.
I don't know.
And maybe that's me being too pearl clutchy, but that is definitely where I came away from the story.
Yeah. We don't know if they're all connected, even though Moose underscore NBA, the Twitter account, was connecting the three. On the day that the Terry Rozier news came out, he tweeted, and we discovered this, in our reporting was, I didn't see those three connections being made at all.
Yeah.
And when I got Moose on the phone, he's like, yeah, I know people in the gambling space. I have people who know things in the NBA. But I also found it from Reddit. And so I haven't found it. And so the people who are listening to this, hit up me and Dan. If you have found a Reddit post that says that Malik Beasley is going to be announced as part of the federal investigation in 4 months, it would be news to me. I did not hear that at all. And combing through an unhealthy amount of tweets over the past couple weeks, Dan, I wasn't able to find someone who had a similar thing. That knowledge of Malik Beasley being wrapped up in this as well. We don't even know what this is.
Exactly.
We just know that they're the Eastern District of New York, according to ESPN and confirmed by other people, is that they are investigating a gambling probe into NBA players. And one of the people that they're looking at for whatever reason is Malik Beasley. And at the end of this, Malik Beasley is a free agent, a guy that was one of the best 3-point shooters in the NBA and second in Sixth Man of the Year. And it's, Dan, last year, Terry Rozier was announced to be part of a federal investigation, and he kept playing.
Yeah.
He was under contract. That is not the same situation we have here with Malik Beasley. It's a guy who was on the doorstep, on the verge of signing a huge deal that, as you'll hear in the podcast, and I didn't know this, but the litany of financial troubles that he's had over the years, that he was on the verge of signing what looked like to be a $42 million in that neighborhood, the full mid-level with the Detroit Pistons. And then they pivoted, Caris LeVert and Duncan Robinson. And now I think the rest of the NBA, as well as you are, Dan, as well as I am, waiting to see how this plays out with the authorities, with the NBA. Adam Silver talked about it on Tuesday at his press conference at Vegas, said that, we are cooperating with the feds on this one. You know, is that there's these federal investigations and we're complying. We're cooperating. I will note Terry Rozier was investigated by the NBA in 2023. They closed and cleared that. They didn't find any wrongdoing. The NBA is different than the feds. The authorities have access through subpoenas or some other court orders that they can get a lot more information than the NBA can as a private entity. So Adam Silver said it. He's like, we're only privy to certain information, whereas the government can get more information than we're allowed to see. So we'll see. But what happens with Malik Beasley? What happens with the Pistons? What they do? Do they re-sign Malik Beasley at the end of this if he gets cleared? Who knows? But it does feel like this is an ongoing situation and one that I encourage people to listen to and go check out the article at TomTheFighter.com. Is just the idea of like, man, the NBA never sleeps. It is just always coming up with crazy stories like this.
And maybe has some reasons to stay awake at night. I don't know. Yeah, the forever ending line of like, it will be interesting to see where we go from here. I think for better or for worse, that certainly applies to this one. And, you know, listen, not to try to keep shady doings under wraps, but like if you're part of something like this, maybe don't tweet about it. I don't know. Like maybe be careful out there, everybody. Just everybody. Be careful out there forever. Thank you so much.
I'm Dan Devine.
Yep.
And that's my word of advice today.
Be careful forever.
As we act like Daryl Morey walking out that door.
Choose to think of the positive.
We're thinking of the positive, and hopefully there's nothing to see here and that this is just one big misunderstanding. And we can just keep talking about the NBA without having this federal investigation continuing to disrupt the discourse and the conversation and all the cool happenings around the league. Sixers. We'll see what happens with the Sixers. Everything just kind of feels like we'll see what happens. The Lakers. We'll see what happens with LeBron and his weird situation that's going on. I'm sure we'll probably hit that again this summer. But Dan, thanks so much for your four little numbers. And you look great. You look refreshed after your quote unquote vacation. There's no small kids involved vacation. Doesn't exist. But it's great to see you, man.
Great to see you too. Congratulations on the great big story. And thanks for slumming it with me a little bit here on the big number after your big week.
I'm sure this story is not going away, so stay tuned. Hey, breaking news. ESPN Shams Charania reporting that Bradley Beal has agreed to a buyout with the Phoenix Suns, and he is going to sign a two-year, $11 million deal with the Los Angeles Clippers. According to Keith Smith over at SpotTrack.com, first year is going to be about $5.3 million and the second year $5.6 million. Player option for the second year, meaning that if Bradley Beal resuscitates his career and rebuilds his value around the league with the Clippers this year, he can become an unrestricted free agent next year. So first blush, great move by the Los Angeles Clippers. I mean, this is a team that needed, with Norm Powell's exit, they move him to the Miami Heat. They needed to fill the scoring void in case James Harden and Kawhi Leonard are not on the floor. And that is a big question mark for the Clippers. It's like, what happens if James Harden or Kawhi Leonard, who have not had the strongest injury histories and reliabilities in the past, what happens if one of them needs to miss significant time? Who's going to be the ball handler? Now you got it with Brad Beal. Norm Powell leaving. He fills the shoes left by Powell. And I got to say, like, the scarlet letter of having this guy on a max deal, one of the worst contracts in the NBA, you got to get that out of your head. Bradley Beal's going to be awesome for the Clippers at this number. That is a steal. Like, you're not going to be able to get a guy of that talent at this number of $5 million. You know, that's basically the non-taxpayer mid-level, what was left of the Clippers non-taxpayer mid-level exception. A player of Bradley Beal's caliber on the open market is getting $10, $20 million a year, not five. So the Clippers, this is great business for them, is that they're getting a good score, a plug-and-play score, a guy who can do some ball handling and running that offense in the event that James Harden is hitting the bench or he's not playing or Kawhi Leonard needs a game off, because we know Kawhi Leonard isn't going to be playing 82 games next year. So Bradley Beal is not just an insurance policy. He's a great catch-and-shoot scorer that I think can be that guy off the ball, attacking closeouts, a guy who's finishing at the rim. Doesn't get to the free throw line a ton, but that's what James Harden and Kawhi Leonard are for. And I mean, if you look at the deals that they've made, John Collins at the four, you got Ivica Zubac at the five, Derek Jones Jr. also providing depth, Chris Dunn as your point of attack, elite perimeter defender. The same thing that we're saying with the Philadelphia 76ers, like if healthy, this team can make the conference finals. Same thing for the Sixers. Same thing for the Clippers here is they got a lot of older veteran players who have iffy injury histories. And what they're doing now is stacking those veteran players to say, basically, we know we're not going to get these guys for the entire season. But in the event that Kawhi, Brad Beal, or James Harden need a night off, or they need someone else to shoulder the load, the scoring load, we've got those guys. Is it better? Is this team better than the Oklahoma City Thunder? No. I'm not going to put them on the same tier. I think they're a tier below. I think OKC right now is a tier above the entire NBA, not just in the Western Conference, but I think that they are going to be the defending champions next year. The youth, the improvement internally, just you got Nikola Topic, who is just coming in as a rookie, adding to the depth of this Oklahoma City Thunder team. Jalen Williams is back on an extension. Chet Holmgren extended. They bring back this core. I don't think anyone's touching this the Oklahoma City Thunder this year. The Clippers are going to be in that thick of the race with Denver, with the Lakers, with Minnesota, trying to get into that Western Conference Finals against the Thunder. And I think the Clippers raise their chances of doing that. Phoenix Suns, on the other hand, this is kind of the white flag, right? They really screwed themselves with the Bradley Beal contract, trading for a guy who had a no-trade clause with $60 million for the next two seasons. That's going to be stretched, a wave and stretch, meaning the next 2 years of his contract are going to be flattened to the next 5 years. Similar thing to what the Milwaukee Bucks did with Damian Lillard. Bradley Beal, though, is not coming off a torn Achilles. He's a much better player this upcoming season than what we could have projected for Damian Lillard. So Bradley Beal for the Clippers raises their chances of being in the Western Conference Finals. They might even be the favorite outside of the Oklahoma City Thunder to make the Western Conference Finals, competing with Denver, Minnesota, Memphis, Lakers. I'm probably missing a team in there. You know, when you're looking at the contenders in the West, I still think OKC is the number one and not even close. No other team is going to be close. So can Dallas get in there if everything breaks right? Sure. But to me, it's going to be Houston, Clippers, and Denver in that second tier. Oklahoma City is still the favorite, but I think Bradley Beal is going to move the needle a little bit, but not enough to win the Western Conference Finals and to be a serious title contender on the likes of Oklahoma City and what I think the Cleveland Cavaliers can do if they all their core four are healthy and playing to their abilities. I think it's just OKC and the rest. Like, I think they're that good. And with Bradley Beal, the Clippers are going to be better. But to me, this is a smart move for the Clippers to get this guy on 10% of what he, I think, in the open market, probably 20% of what he could get on the open market. Nice bit of work by Lawrence Frank and the front office there for the Clippers. And the Phoenix Suns, they're rebuilding around Devin Booker. They're retooling. Malawach is going to be a nice piece for them to rebuild. But they are done with contending at the highest levels, if they even were. I mean, the reason was, you can even look back to last year. They weren't even close. They didn't make the postseason. So this team was going nowhere, and this deal helps move them in the right direction, which is acknowledging that the KD era was a mistake, that the Bradley Beal era was a mistake, And now they can get some flexibility going forward, but this is going to be a while before they're able to crawl out of this hole that they're in. $20 million approximately going to be on the books for the next five seasons with Bradley Beal. Good on the Clippers. Hey, that will do it for this week's big number. Appreciate everyone for listening, watching on YouTube. Go subscribe on YouTube. Smash that subscribe button. Go give us a 5-star review. Also tell your friends. And also want to give a shout out to Emmy behind the scenes. Thank you so much for working on this pod and making it a reality, as well as Mike Goldfarb. Thank you so much to everybody working on this show over at Yahoo Sports. We'll be back again next week. And until then, be positive and be happy. Stay safe.